joining me in the studio on this Monday morning, fresh from a couple of shows and indeed some other business over the weekend, Greg and Satomi.
Hi, Zan.
How you doing?
Good, how are you?
Welcome to Australia. Welcome to Triple J. It is your first time in Australia and kind of interesting circumstances because you actually were a wedding band over the weekend.
That's always been our biggest dream. Yeah.
Why a wedding band? Is this the main reason why you've come to Australia after 10 years of being together?
Yeah, exactly. Finally, someone invited us to play their wedding, so yeah. We were like, okay.
So what were the circumstances of this wedding band action over the weekend?
The couple that got married, they put out our music in England, and they've had us playing at their festival a bunch of times, and we got to know them that way. And
it's called All Tomorrow's Parties.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, people have probably heard me banging on a bit about the All Tomorrow's Parties festivals on Triple J. Great sort of artist-curated festivals that take place in the UK and the US.
Yeah.
And you guys have actually played at a stack of them, so I guess you probably gotten fairly lucky. Cozy with the
people who run it. You know, it's the kind of thing where whenever we see them, the festival is actually occurring, and you've never seen two people running around like chickens with their head cut off, you know, as much as these two when the festival is going. And I mean, you're lucky if you get 3 seconds to even like say hello or whatever. I mean, the amount of things that, you know, are about to go wrong and crises that need to get solved and stuff. I mean, I can't imagine somebody putting on, you know, the warehouse show we played yesterday here in Melbourne, let alone, you know, like a 3-day, you know, music festival with bands from all over the world.
So at their wedding, were they a lot more zen? Were they calm?
Well, that was the crazy thing. You know, it was really one of the first times that I've ever seen them where they, you know, they were just happy and just peaceful. And you know, we went to the ceremony. We played at the reception later, but I mean, it was just a very beautiful day and stuff. It was really fun. So,
and as the wedding band, I know I've actually had the fun chance of DJing at a couple of weddings, inevitably people are going to request Dexy's Midnight Runners, Come On, Eileen.
It didn't matter.
Or a little bit of ABBA. They didn't ask you to play something they could dance to, nothing like that.
We could. I think that anybody who had it in their mind to give out requests kind of went to a corner with their ears plugged as soon as we started playing. And I think they knew right off the bat that wasn't in our repertoire. Come On, Eileen, right?
Didn't go down too well with the parents and the old folks. But still,
some of them we did. You know, that's the funny thing that I found about our band that really makes me happy, actually, is that it's not that young people like it and old people don't like it at all. It's half the old people like it and half the young people like it and half the old people hate it and half the young people hate it. And age doesn't seem to be a big factor, believe it or not.
You divide people from birth to very old age.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, tell us about, because this brand new record from Deerhoof, The Runner's Four, clocks in at about 20 songs, which suggests to me that you've pretty much said, okay, well, whatever we want to do, we're going to do. But it never gets boring. It sounds like, you know, four people who are absolutely doing exactly what they want to do individually and as a band. Is it sort of, are you coming from different areas musically, or was it a chance for you to be able to do whatever you wanted?
I came from Japan, and you know, everybody else from like East Coast in US and West Coast, and you know, very different in the middle and everything. So it was very interesting how we like come up with music, and we all have different taste in music, and it took so much time. We reduced. I mean, song always is longer than what it is, and always we shorten and then come up with like 2-minute song, you know. And all the editing and arranging, just we went back and forth. We did the final. We went to the factory to press, and then we called the factory 3 times for this album. Like, please stop.
We changed our minds.
Yeah, we are going back.
It sounds terrible. You know, we got to do it over again, you know. Or we got to change the song order, or, you know, something doesn't sound right. Because we do it all ourselves, so there's not this sort of guiding hand, you know, of the producer or whatever, you know, who has like a shred of sense and can tell us when, you know, when it sounds okay or when it's done or, you know, anything like that. We're just making it up as we go along, and we don't have any rule book for, you know, how do you make music? How do you make an album? How do you do a band? You know, so we just do it ourselves.
Just begin.
Yeah.
So if you're talking about not having any rules, is there more of a tendency to love the storytelling of Deerhoof or the music, or is it all in one big jumble and you can't really separate those sort of entities? It just what comes out, comes out.
The storytelling, you mean like the lyrics?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, it is a jumble, because each of the four of us writes music and each of the four of us writes lyrics. So there's some examples of any of those things all over, like that CD you were talking about. So, it's a jumble. Everything we do is kind of a jumble. But that's the fun of it, too, you know. I mean, I actually... I kind of can't understand how some bands are able to do it any other way. I mean, it kind of mystifies me. I think it's kind of amazing when there's any kind of musician or artist can sort of make things to order or make things according to an approved formula.
Mm.
Or, you know, the marketing machine says, okay, now we need this kind of song, and they're able to do it. Like, for me, it's the idea of making music is like about as far from that as I can imagine. It's totally unpredictable and mysterious. And I don't, for myself at least, I don't know where my songs come from. You know, they just seem to drop out of nowhere, you know, sometimes in the middle of the night or something. And I can't, you know, there's no way in the world I could say, well, I know I'm going to want to dream this kind of song tonight. You know, I don't know what it's going to be. And I don't know what, each song seems to be different too. Like what worked on the last song we wrote, we can't apply that set of rules to the next song and just say, oh, that's going to work too. Each song seems to want us to do different things with it. Some songs want us to play really strictly and carefully, and other songs want us to seem to improvise a lot, and some songs seem to want to be quiet, and others seem to want to be loud. Some are short,
and like
some are
people
long.
Are saving up, you know, the favorite melodies, like you know, own melodies, and like when we make songs, and like I have something like this, and then I have something that goes with that, you know, and then combine and all that. Yeah, it's like a puzzle.
So. Yeah. Which is, so obviously you guys are really crap at puzzles if it takes you that long to make a record.
All right.
I guess what you're talking about there, though, is having complete freedom and not having those, you know, market forces and record companies driving you. But what, considering you've been making what is easily probably the most, some of the most unique music and always changing over the last decade, what is driving you? Is it something that's coming from within? Is it like a little dream that you had when you were little kids to make music? What is it that's behind the force of Deerhoof to always keep changing and always to keep making new music?
Yeah.
Well, I always think that, like, I don't want to make music that sounds same from the last album. Mm-hmm. You know, there are bands. I don't want to talk about other bands, but, like, you know, bands of the 82 or, like, you know, band, you know, oh, they got the sound, you know.
Yeah.
I like our music to evolve and, you know, like, just change and, oh, you know, unexpected or something. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, we try to do different, you know, things, or different sounds or different approach. Yeah, so yeah. Runners 4 really was different from the other one, so the last one. So
absolutely.
Yeah, people told me, like, whoa, what did you guys do? You know, it sounds so different. I liked the last one, you know.
Yeah, right.
Which
what
is a
wrong?
Compliment to us. Like, oh, yes. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But also, I didn't mean to imply, you know, when I was saying that thing about the marketing machine, you know, handing some dictum down or some requirement down to us, I didn't mean to say that we don't consider market forces. I just meant to say that there isn't a guiding hand, there isn't someone above us on the hierarchy telling us what to think. But the thing is, we think about it on our own, and actually I really do think a lot about I try to imagine what people would like. I don't feel at all like I'm trying to make music that people will dislike, and I don't think that that we're trying to make music independent of what anyone will like. One of the most interesting challenges for me that's been so fun over all these years is meeting other people, people who come to our shows or people who write to me sometimes, an email or something like that. And I'm completely fascinated by finding out what it is that they hear when they hear our music. Because I know what I hear, you know, I listen to it over and over again as in the process of making it. But I'm totally fascinated with the idea of what are other people hearing. And a lot of times it's very different from each other. One person hears it as, you know, very kind of candy, you know, pop sort of music. Another person hears it as this very serious kind of experimental music or something. And other people put it on in the background, and other people are listening to it carefully on headphones. And different people are finding different things in it. And when I am able to try and, like, learn to hear our music through their ears, different people's ears, then I think it helps me. That's part of what drives me when I'm making the music, is that I'm trying to imagine what are different people that I have come to know, like, what are they going to hear? I try to put myself in their shoes or something, if that makes any sense.
Greg and Satomi from the band join us on this Monday morning here at Triple J, talking all things Dehoof and the very first Australian tour. We'll get to those dates in just a tick, but
But first, I wanted to ask, Zan.
Yeah?
How is it that you DJs, you always know, like when you said Triple J, you said it like 3 milliseconds after the last note. I want to know, how do you DJs always know exactly when to come in and say the
years of practice. And because our life depends on it. If we slip that extra millisecond, we're punished, physically punished, after we come off air.
Yeah.
But that's another story for another time.
It's about timing.
It is. It's all about timing. Yeah. I reckon drummers would make good DJs for some reason.
I don't have any sense of timing.
Greg, you were talking off air just about how welcomed you'd been in Australia and how that was a bit of a surprise for you. What's it been like, this first few shows that you've done in the country? Has it kind
It's been like...
Three.
Like... sorry, it's been like what took 10 years in the U.S. to, you know, to finally start to happen, where you know, kind of build up some interest in the band, happened in 0 seconds. It happened in the millisecond it took to cross the international date line in the plane. And suddenly, just the first show, you know, I mean, there's just hundreds of people who not only came, but many of whom, you know, seem to already know the songs. And it's been funny. A couple times we've been singing a few songs, and I'm actually watching some people in the front row singing the lyrics to help remind me of what the lyrics are.
I'm following them. Yeah, right.
Well, it's been amazing.
You know, the US has done the hard yards for us. We just get you on a silver platter when the decade's up. You should have, with most bands, 10 years doing the hard yards overseas, and then you just come and visit us. But the Dehoof live show is the stuff of legend. Everyone that I've spoken to about your show, indeed read reviews of overseas, just says that you're one of the most amazing bands, incredible rock and roll band, incredible visceral energy on stage. Is there any way to put it into words? What happens on stage? Is it madness? Do you stand there in ties and, you know, pretty skirts?
We did
and
at
just
the wedding.
Very static?
Chris and John both had ties.
Oh, very nice.
At the wedding. I forgot my tie.
But is there a way to kind of describe what happens at a Dehoof show?
What happens is what I think. I don't think that it's that different from any other band. I think it's what happens with any kind of live performance, as opposed to recording, which is just that you can't go back, you know. If something happens, if somebody hits a wrong note, or my timing gets off or whatever it is, there's no way to erase it. We can't do take two. So the way I think we all feel when we're playing live is that it's very fun. We're like, our awareness of any of those kind of details and nuances gets super heightened, you know, to some ridiculous degree, where we're feeling extremely alert. And so anytime, and it happens constantly, anytime one of the four of us makes the slightest mistake, the other three people kind of we'll make instantaneous adjustments. And so it's every time we play a song, it comes out very different from the previous time. You know, somebody wasn't quite turned up enough, and so everybody else suddenly gets really quiet. Or somebody starts to sound like they're slowing down, so everybody else starts slowing down with them. Or, you know, just it is really hard to put into words. I mean, it's just whatever it is that you're doing when you're making music, it's some very mysterious act that I've never, in all this time, like, the mystery about it has only increased rather than been solved, you know.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah, I don't understand what it is that makes human beings, I mean, even some animals, you know, want to make music, you know. And it happens across the globe and throughout the history, you know, of time or whatever. I don't understand what it is that we're doing when we make music. It's really hard to put into words. How do you sum up, you know, centuries and centuries of, I don't know.
I think the best way to do it is to actually go and see Deerhoof live. They're playing tomorrow night, Valentine's Day, in fact, at the Troubadour in Brisbane. You can catch them Wednesday, the 15th of February at Glebe Town Hall. That's an all-ages show, joined by Calvin Johnson on that show. And Thursday, the 16th of February at Spectrum in Sydney. Greg and Satomi from Deerhoof have been joining us on this Monday morning. Guys, it's great to welcome you into the country finally, and fantastic that you've been able to drop in to
see
us.
Thank you
very much.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Yeah. Thank you.
Triple J.